listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And tonight at 9 o'clock, the president will face the nation, not as in on the TV show, but he's going to do his sales pitch. Maybe. Actually, we don't know exactly what he's going to say. In all probability, though, he's going to say, under the war powers that were established by George W. Bush, I have the power to bomb Syria. And I'm going to do that for a while. And if Congress wants to weigh in, that would be a fine thing. And if Congress just wants to dither like they have for the 6 years of my presidency, because the Republicans in the House of Representatives, and for that matter, the Republicans in the Senate, just can't deal with a black guy in the White House, or a Democrat in the White House, for that matter. If they're just going to dither and do nothing, then, I'm going to do it anyway. And take that. Oh, and there is a piece of legislation that has been kicking around Congress. I believe the Senate passed it, and John Boehner has not brought it up for a vote in the House, although I could be wrong on that. It might be that it hasn't passed either body. That authorizes $500 million, $500 million, to just, here's a gift to the administration. It's like a block grant, specifically to fight ISIS. And, in all probability, he's going to say, hey, why don't you do that at least? And I think that both war hawk Republicans and some of the war hawk Democrats and all of the more cautious Democrats can probably get behind that. But here's the piece. Here's the thing. I'd like you to just in your mind for a moment step into the Wayback Machine. Right. And first, let's go back to 9/11. 9/11 was a criminal conspiracy that involved probably fewer than 40 people, maybe even fewer than 30 people who actually knew exactly what was going to happen. Bin Laden didn't even know exactly what was going to happen. He just knew that he had taken a fairly substantial amount of money, which is probably less than $1 million. He'd taken some money. The 9/11 report says half a million. $500,000, and given it to Sheikh Mohammed, what's his name? The Sheikh that they found in Pakistan that they beat up so badly, and he's in our custody now. And he put this thing together, and they got a bunch of Saudis, 17 or 18 out of the 20 guys who were going to do this were Saudis. 19 of them actually did it. And so you've got this small criminal group, a small criminal conspiracy that blew up the buildings on 9/11. George W. Bush could have gone to the American people and said, we know who did this. It's a small criminal conspiracy funded by Saudi Arabia in large part, run by Saudis, run by a Saudi by the name of Osama bin Laden, in fact. And, we're going to ask Saudi Arabia to quit funding this kind of stuff. And by the way, according to the New York Times, Saudi Arabia is running telethons to raise money for ISIS and variations thereof. I'll get to that in a minute. But Bush could have said, we're going to ask Saudi Arabia to stop funding these Sunni, Safali, Wahhabist, neo-Wahhabist radicals, and we're going to ask the world community, Interpol and all of the intelligence agencies of the various countries that have a presence in the Middle East, to find these guys in Afghanistan, which appears to be where they are, although, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, that was his name, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was in Pakistan. So, we're going to find these guys, and we're going to bring them to trial. And if Bush had said that, we'd be about $4 trillion richer right now. There would be no ISIS. There'd be no basically conflict in the Middle East, or if there was, it would be fairly minimal. It would be the result of climate change and the radical price changes in the price of food. Between climate change and Goldman Sachs setting up their food commodity index, they both drove up the price of wheat in the Middle East to the point where, you had the Arab Spring. It was really all about these governments stopping the subsidizing of the price of wheat. because it was getting rarer and rarer, harder and harder to get. So anyhow, Bush could have handled this in a way that did not screw America. But he didn't. And, you know, in fact, if you go back to this and you listen to what Osama bin Laden had to say, this was just before the elections of 2004, Osama bin Laden released a video, and he said, "We are continuing this policy and bleeding America to the point of bankruptcy." He said, "We, alongside the Mujahideen, bled Russia for 10 years until it went bankrupt and was forced to withdraw in defeat." He thought that he was going to do the United States what he did to Russia, and to some extent he has. He said, "All you have to do is send two Mujahideen to the farthest point east to raise a piece of cloth on which is written Al-Qaeda in order to make generals race there to cause America to suffer human, economic, and political losses without their achieving anything of note other than some benefits for their private corporations." As part of the bleed until bankrupt plan, bin Laden pointed to there was an estimate done by the British government that said that Al-Qaeda spent $500,000 to execute 9/11, $500,000 to make 9/11 happen. And bin Laden points to that, and then he says, "Every dollar of Al-Qaeda defeated $1 million by the permission of Allah, besides the loss of huge number of jobs. As for the economic deficit, it has reached astronomical numbers, estimated to total more than $1 trillion. It's even worse than he said back in 2004. He said, "It is true that this shows that Al-Qaeda has gained, but on the other hand, it shows that the Bush administration has also gained, someone that anyone who looks at the size of the contracts acquired by the shady Bush administration-linked mega corporations like Halliburton and its kind will be convinced. It all shows that the real loser is you, the American people, and your economy." And then he goes on to say, "So the war went ahead, the death toll rose, the American economy bled, and Bush became embroiled in the swamps of Iraq that threaten his future." Bin Laden was right. Okay, let's go a little farther than that. In March of 2004, we're back in the way back machine here. Now Bush had said in 1999 that if he became president, he wasn't going to make the mistake his father made of having a short war in the Middle East. He would have a war that ran until the next election so he'd get reelected as a wartime president, because that's where all the political capital was. So we knew that he was going to have a war at least through November of 2004. But in March of 2004, Bush got a big boost. The American people were starting to turn against the war. And then a guy, remember Nick Berg? May of 2004, Nicholas Berg? He was beheaded on videotape by Al-Qaeda. And then a few days later, last day of March in 2004, we had four American contractors in Fallujah who got burned to death and then their bodies were tied up from this bridge. Remember that? Immediately, Congress said, "Oh, we got to have a war." Bush said, "Oh, we've got to amplify the war. Stretch it, big, build it up, go for it." Okay, it totally backfired and created a giant political vacuum. And it was bait. I mean, they were just trying to get us, you know, they wanted to kill more Americans. Bring it on, guys. For every dollar we spend, you guys spend a million. That's what ISIS is doing now. ISIS is another ragtag band. There's probably 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 people hardcore in the leadership. There's only 20 or 30,000 of them altogether, and half of them are, you know, old members, Sunni members of the Iraqi military. And they are begging us to come attack them. Please make us important. We want to be, because, see, in a good drama, in a good cartoon, you've got to have Superman, but Superman is useless without Lex Luthor. ISIS wants us to be the Lex Luthor in the Middle East.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Bush had turned Al-Qaeda into the Lex Luthor for Americans, and it looks like maybe Obama's going to do the same. We'll see. More on this in just a second. Welcome back. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Norma, you had some thoughts on ISIS?
Good morning, Dr. Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say go, go, go. I agree with you, and I really do think that, you know, the United Nations should put sanctions on Saudi Arabia until they stop supporting this, and that here in the States we should do the same. And if nothing else, like I said last week, we should start confiscating their property here.
Yeah. And it's not just Saudi Arabia. I mean, the article where I got that information was in the New York Times by David Kirkpatrick on September 7th, which is, what, 3 days ago? And, you know, it's about how it's happening in Qatar. We've got our largest military base in the Middle East in Qatar, or Qatar, I guess is how you say it.
Yes, but yeah, Saudi is expanding all across the globe, buying land, buying companies, and this would be an opportunity for the rest of the world to get rid of the Saudis. They own so much here. You know, one day, are we going to have the Crown Prince on TV saying, I own this country now?
Well, you know, he came over, he was making out with George W. Bush. They were kissing on the lips. I mean, it's Prince Bandar. He's now been retired since John McCain and Lindsey Graham encouraged him to give all that money to ISIS in Syria. And then the Saudi government said, hey, wait a minute. And because I think it was just that they didn't want to get involved in a battle in Syria. But,
well, I really, you know, I'm sick of going out and defending oil wells that belong to U.S. corporations in the name of freedom or stopping terrorism, when it seems to me like this is some kind of gameplay that was planned a long time ago to keep us there and keep us diverted from whatever else is going on. Everybody is running around screaming the sky is falling, and there's a simple way to stop it. Put sanctions on Saudi Arabia and start confiscating what they have or freeze their accounts worldwide until they stop terrorism.
And this is the problem. Saudi Arabia is, you know, they cut this deal back in the 1700s with Mr. Wahhab, and thus Wahhabism, which is the, you know, ISIS is basically expressing Wahhabism. Wahhabism is the most extreme of the fundamentalist right-wing forms of Islam, and, you know, cover the women head to toe, kill people. I mean, Saudi Arabia's beheaded 19 people just this month, or last month, excuse me, just last month. 19 people. Eight of them were for nonviolent crimes. One of them was beheaded for witchcraft. It was a woman who was a schizophrenic. They beheaded her for witchcraft. They behead people for being gay. They behead people for speaking out against the government and calling for democracy. I mean, this is the country that is like our best ally in the Middle East. I'm sorry, they hit us on 9/11.
I know, and we still support and pay for their hospital in Riyadh, and they still won't let the women use it because Islamic law says a woman can't be seen by another man.
Right.
But we're still paying for the hospital, the equipment.
We're paying for a hospital in Riyadh?
Yes.
Why and how? I mean, they've got plenty of money.
I know, but it's part of our $235 million human aid package we send them every year.
Oh, geez. Thank you, Norma, for that. Thank you for the call. I will continue the rant right after this. Stick around. 20 minutes past the hour. The president is speaking tonight at 9 o'clock. I'm looking forward to watching this. I, you know, setting everything aside and just in as a fundamental statement of principle, one of the things I have been most impressed about this president over the last 6 years, and you know, I have areas of policy disagreement with him, free trade, for example, but one of the areas where I've been most impressed by this guy is that he plays the long game. He is thoughtful. He's deliberate. He has good judgment, in my opinion. In fact, I think he has very good judgment. I don't think he's being well served by everybody on his staff. I think his messaging and communications are weak. People don't know all the accomplishments of his administration. I mean, you know, it's just extraordinary some of the stuff that they've done. From stopping predatory lending to soldiers, to stopping lost time, to stopping torture, to increasing spending for the VA, to letting women serve on subs, to equal pay for women, a nuclear arms reduction and disposal agreement, nailing BP, strengthening the EPA. I mean, it just goes on, and not to mention Obamacare. And the most important of all the things he did is he stopped the Great Depression. Now, I would argue it was not stopped as comprehensively as it could be, but that would require action by Congress. Congress needs to re-regulate the banks, and this Congress will not go along with anything that might help this president or that might help this nation. So, you know, all that said, I think his judgment is excellent, and, you know, we'll see if he's going to bow to this kind of pressure. But as I said, we went through this in 2001. We went through this in 2004 with Nick Berg being beheaded and the four guys burned bodies hanging from the bridge in Fallujah. And so what did we do? We went into Fallujah and we basically bombed that town back to the Stone Age. And now it's an ISIS stronghold, or if it isn't, it's damn close to it. Surprise, surprise. And then we see this piece, David Kirkpatrick, September 7, writing in the New York Times about Qatar, which is spelled like Qatar. Qatar's support of Islamists alienates allies near and far is the headline. And his leads two sentences. Standing at the front of a conference hall in Doha. Now, Doha is the capital city of Qatar. The visiting sheikh told his audience of wealthy Qataris that to help the battered residents of Syria, they shouldn't bother with donations to humanitarian programs or to the Western-backed Free Syrian Army. Instead, he said, give your money to the ones who will spend it on jihad, not on aid. This is Sheikh Hajjaj al-Ajmi, and he's a fundraiser for Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate. Now, Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate, you know, a good chunk of that is what we know as ISIS. And it goes on to say, Sheikh Ajmi and at least a half a dozen others identified by the United States as private fundraisers for Al-Qaeda's Syrian franchise operate freely in Doha. And the state of Qatar itself has given money to the Taliban in Afghanistan, to Hamas in Gaza, to rebels from Syria, militias in Libya, allies of the Muslim Brotherhood across the neighborhood, across the region. Goes on to say, Sheikh Ajmi readily taps donors in Saudi Arabia, sometimes even making their pitches on Saudi and Kuwaiti-owned television networks. Yes, they're doing telethons to raise money for ISIS. In the New York Times 3 days ago. Look it up. David Kirkpatrick. I would be astounded, given the political power that Qatar and Saudi Arabia have in the United States, and this was another interesting and long piece, I believe it was in the New York Times over the weekend, might have been in the Washington Post, but I'm pretty sure it was the New York Times, about how all these foreign governments, some 30 of them, now have major presences in the United States where they are hiring lobbying and law firms to present their case to Congress, and they're funding think tanks like the Brookings Institution, being funded by foreign governments who then come up with think tank reports that are favorable to those foreign governments. Why? Because of Citizens United. And this is exactly what John Paul Stevens wrote about in his dissent in Citizens United. He said, this is like saying Tokyo Rose can have her way. Tokyo Rose has, during World War II, the woman who broadcast from Japan to our troops saying, you guys are going to lose. Why don't you just give up? In perfect English. Why don't this is that. So what we need to be doing is we need to be clamping down on the sources of funding for ISIS, which includes Qatar and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and perhaps others. We need to be organizing coalitions of local Sunni groups. You know, President Obama is trying to bring Turkey in on this, okay? Turkey would be a great ally. It's a largely Sunni country, and it's a largely secular government. The problem is Turkey is fighting a war with the Kurds in their south, which is the border with the Kurds in the north of Iraq. And we're supporting the Kurds in Iraq, which Turkey calls terrorists. So, I mean, there's all these weird alliances and interrelations and things that just make this really a mess. And the president tonight is going to say, oh, yeah, we're going to jump in with both feet. I hope not. What would you like the president to say tonight? I'd like him to say, you know, we're going to prosecute the war criminals, Bush and Cheney. Well, I'll give you more right after the break. We'll pick up your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
What do you think the president should be saying tonight? We'll be right back. Good, the bad, and the very, very epithematically ugly, the good. Senator Bernie Sanders, during an appearance this week at the Vermont AFL-CIO's annual convention, the Vermont senator proposed a brilliant solution to the growing gap between rich and poor, making the estate tax more effective. Under Sanders' plan, the richest 0.25% of Americans, quarter of 1%, not even the 1%, the quarter of 1%, would have to pay a progressive estate tax that increases in amount according to relative wealth of their estates. There would also be a billionaire's surtax of 10%. You won't hear this on Fox so-called news, but instituting a progressive estate tax actually has the support of many of America's top economists. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, for example, called Senator Sanders' plan a welcome step towards preventing an American aristocracy. There are a lot of hacks in Washington these days, but it's nice to see that someone is thinking about working people. Keep up the good work, Senator Sanders. The bad. DiGiorno Pizza. The company is under fire after it sent out a tweet that many saw as mocking domestic violence victims. The tweet in question, which was sent out Monday night, included the words, "You had pizza," next to the hashtag, "Why I Stayed." To put this in perspective, "Why I Stayed" is a hashtag domestic violence victims have been using raise awareness about their struggle in the wake of the scandal surrounding NFL star Ray Rice, who was caught on film punching his fiancée. DiGiorno has since apologized for this tweet, calling it an accident. But let's be honest, mistake or not, it's got to be one of the dumbest corporate tweets in the very long list of dumb corporate tweets. And the very, very ugly, Danny Ferry. Documents obtained by WSB-TV in Atlanta, Georgia, show the Atlanta Hawks basketball team general manager using racially charged language to talk about black players. According to the documents, which were unearthed as part of an internal investigation, Ferry said about one black player that, quote, "he has a little African in him, not in a bad way, but he's like a guy who would have a nice store out front but sell you counterfeit stuff out of the back," end of quote. I don't know how any African-American could feel comfortable playing for the Atlanta Hawks after hearing that sort of racist language. It is very, very ugly. Okay. So just to wrap this up, ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, small group of basically criminals, fundamentalist, radical fundamentalist religious criminals. Most of the people in the region don't want them or like them. Many of the countries in the region don't want them or like them. Let them deal with it. Now, maybe we can provide logistical support, but I personally believe that the more America is involved in the Middle East, period, the more these people in the middle of their civil war are going to go, hey, let's turn our guns on America. It's like we become the unifying force. When we were occupying Iraq, and now we're occupying Afghanistan, we're getting shot at by Sunnis and Shia both. I mean, nobody likes an occupier. Isn't it time for us to say, as Ronald Reagan did after those Marines were killed in Lebanon, we're out of here? Reagan, in that speech where he said we're leaving Lebanon because they just killed 239 of our Marines, he didn't even use the word terrorist. He just said we're leaving. Anyhow, your thoughts. What would you like the president to say tonight? Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, Tom. What I want to say is the regular Iraqi army has like at least a quarter of a million soldiers, and they have like half a million in reserve. So I think the president is right by not sending ground troops, because you have almost a million troops that can be called up to fight ISIS. And the highest numbers I've seen is like 80,000 for ISIS. So, but I think the problem was the reason why they ran away. You know, you have soldiers, like, for instance, if a soldier's born in Baghdad and then they send him all the way up to Mosul, and then here comes ISIS to take over Mosul, and he doesn't have any loyalties in Mosul.
Right.
So I think that and morale had a whole lot to do with them giving up.
Yeah, and they're saying, hey, this is Kurdish territory. Why am I giving my Shia life to defend it?
Exactly. So I think that, you know, ISIS has to be dealt with and gotten rid of because of the atrocities that they are committing. But also, I think when the president came out and said it would take like 3 years, I think that's way too long. I think that is giving the military defense contractors another windfall for profits.
Sure.
I think the best thing to do is just to get them out of Iraq as fast as they can and try to concentrate them to the border between Syria and Iraq and, you know, move them up there as fast as they can. And then really try to finish them off there.
Yeah. I mean, the real tragedy here is that, in a way, we are fighting a proxy war against Saudi Arabia and Qatar, who are our allies. It's just, you know, we give all this oil money to Saudi Arabia. We give all this military money to Qatar so we can base the Sixth Fleet there. And then they go around and they do fundraising for ISIS. It's like, really?
You got Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, all of those countries are funding ISIS.
Yeah.
You know, well, like you said earlier, they were funding the Syrian rebels who are ISIS and the al-Nusra Front, who doesn't want anything to do with ISIS anymore. Al-Qaeda itself doesn't want anything to do with ISIS anymore. But all those Gulf state countries were funding the rebels against Assad.
Right.
And we were ready to bomb Assad, and actually Putin is the one who saved us with that deal from messing up and bombing Assad.
Right. He was able to negotiate the destruction of the chemical weapons. And here's the ultimate irony, Wayne. If we take down ISIS in Syria, we have taken down the single largest and most effective fighting force against the Assad government, which we also want to take down. And
right.
It's like, you know... George Bush opened the gates of hell in 2002 when he decided to bomb Afghanistan, and in 2003 when he decided to bomb Iraq. He opened the gates of hell. And it's not like, you know, Colin Powell said pottery barn rules, but you can glue pottery back together. This is Humpty Dumpty rules. You cannot put Humpty Dumpty back together again. This requires something really big. And the really big that it requires is not weapons and war and guns. It's schools and infrastructure and rebuilding cities and civil society. And the number one thing, the first thing we've got to do is stop the countries in the region who are pouring gasoline on this fire on an ongoing basis and have been doing it, in the case of Saudi Arabia, for 200 years. We need to stop that and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, we want to support secular governments. Saudi Arabia is not a secular government. Qatar arguably is not a secular government. We want to support governments in the region that are going to have democracy as their top priority, not whatever form of Islam is in fashion this week. I mean, here in the United States, we're pushing back against Christians who want to take over our government. We should be doing this, you know, we should be supporting, even regress. I was going to say progressive, but, you know, even conservative governments in the Middle East who want to push back against the religious fanatics among them. Wayne, as always, your insights are brilliant. Thank you for the call. Horacio in San Diego. How do you say it?
Yes, it's Horacio. How's it going?
Horacio, I'm great.
I just want to wake up the American people. Pretty good. I want to wake up the American people just like you. Like in CNN and NBC and even in the Washington Journal, they show this video of this Hummer going down the road and then it gets blown up, right?
Right, over and over and over again.
Yes. Okay, that's a $100,000 Hummer that gets blown up by a $1 million missile.
Yeah.
Okay, then they show a howitzer that's parked, and a howitzer is a mass-produced weapon. So I would say about $300,000, and it gets blown up by another $1 million missile. I can right there. ISIL II, American taxpayers, zero.
Right.
It's So all they have to do is just put all the weapons, all the equipment that they got and that they stole from the Iraqi army, and let the United States bomb every single one with $1 million missiles. That is a lot of money.
Yeah, it's what this is.
Done with those machine guns or those cannons that those airplanes have. No, because bullets don't cost that much money.
Yeah, this is what bin Laden said in 2004. He said, the real loser is you, the American people, and your economy. He said the winner is the Bush administration, something that anyone who looks at the size of their contracts acquired by the shady Bush administration linked mega corporations like Halliburton and its kind will be convinced. And, you know, he was right. I hate to say, you know, any sentence that has bin Laden and was right in the same sentence, but he was. And Bush was wrong. So it's Horacio, I think you have absolutely nailed it. So what do you want to hear the president say tonight? We got 30 seconds.
I say, hey, you know what? Those oil companies and those private contractors are still working there and making out of millions and billions of dollars. Let's put a tax on them like the mafia. Protection money. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear protection money from these oil companies and these private contractors.
I would like to hear we're going to take all Americans out of the Middle East. You know, Israel's a big boy. They can defend themselves now. And, you know, and the other our other allies in the region, Egypt and whatnot. I think, frankly, the whole thing is better off if there are not Americans there. Horacio, thank you very much for the call. Horacio. It's 15 minutes before the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day, my thoughts, your thoughts. What's the president's going to speak tonight? What should he be saying?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I'm also curious to hear from conservatives, particularly those who might be inclined to support Rand Paul, who up until recently has been opposed to this guy, although he has changed his tune. And welcome back. Let's see here. Anita in San Antonio, Texas, watching Free Speech TV. You're on the air, Anita.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Hi. I would love to hear the president say we're going to do nothing.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing I can... they're just going to have to solve this themselves.
Yeah.
And every time we get involved, we give them more reasons
to hate us.
To come here and to attack us.
Right.
Yeah, to hate us.
Yeah. And
I mean.
Yeah. And I would say even if they're planning another 9/11, you know, more people died on 9/11 from tobacco than died from 9/11. We need to put these things in perspective. I mean, more Americans died from tobacco. Somebody pulled off a spectacular attack and they killed a bunch of Americans and they destroyed a bunch of property. They're criminals. Let's go after them as criminals. But, you know, even if ISIS is able to get, you know, a bunch of true believer Americans to come back on their American passports and do nasty stuff here in the United States, so what? You know, look at how Great Britain dealt with the IRA for years. Is, you know, they took a bunch of hits and they just kept responding proportionally, reasonably. They did not turn Ireland against them. They didn't start bombing Ireland. And now the IRA has members in Parliament, in the British Parliament. I mean, it's a straight or representation in the Irish Parliament, rather. And I believe. And this is common sense. This is not to get hysterical when somebody's trying to make you hysterical. And that's what the Bush administration is doing. Anita, thank you. Very well said. Cliff in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff. Watching Free Speech TV. You wanted to talk about the lead-up to the Iraq War?
Well, it's all just like now when you talk about how the Bush administration messed up or they made a mistake. Like when you describe these lead-ups to, I don't call it a war. I still call it an invasion and occupation of Iraq. I refuse to call it a war. But you make it sound like it was a military or a political mistake that this administration did. I think it was all intentional because war is such a huge business. You just talked about it with a previous caller, how this gravy train has been so profitable for Halliburton and Dynacor and Blackwater and KBR and, you know, dozens and dozens of other defense contractors. This perpetual war.
Listen, this is Cindy Sheehan testifying before Congress back 7 years ago, 8 years ago. Here she is.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalists, and longtime Bush family friend, Mickey Herskowitz.
This was 99.
Then Governor George Bush stated, "One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
And his definition of a successful presidency was he gets to privatize Social Security, which is what he tried to do right after the elections in 2004. It's amazing. Cliff, you're absolutely right, and oil is playing way too big a piece of this. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back. Place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. You will recall back in the 1970s, and I realize many of you are not old enough to recall this, but therefore I will make it real for you. President Jimmy Carter went before the United States. Now, earlier in the decade, during the Nixon presidency, there had been, you know, there were two different times this happened. There was, basically a war between Israel and Egypt and a few other of the Arab states. And as a consequence of our supporting Israel in that war, the Arab states cut off our oil supply. The price of oil exploded. We experienced inflation as a result of that, because inflation comes about as a consequence of commodity prices spiking. And Jimmy Carter looked at this and he said, you know, this is a security nightmare that we are so dependent upon the Middle East for our oil. And not just a national security nightmare, but it's also an economic nightmare. We need to become energy independent. And he gave this speech. Listen.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
And then he went on to say,
moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
And then the Reagan campaign may cut a deal with Rand to hold the hostages, and Jimmy Carter lost the election, and Ronald Reagan came into office, and one of the first things he did was blow up Carter's legislation, do away with the tax credits and things for solar power, and took the Carter's solar panels off the roof of the White House. It all began with Reagan. None of this would be happening in the Middle East right now if Jimmy Carter's plan had stayed in place. None of it. Ronald Reagan brought us to this day. It's just mind-boggling to me. Todd in Tacoma. Hey, Todd, what's up?
Hey, I was wondering why the media says ISIS, but John Kerry and others say ISIL.
Right.
And also I was wondering about the John McCain and Lindsey Graham when they went over to Saudi Arabia to beg Prince Bandar.
Right.
I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, it's pretty straightforward. In fact, there's a there's an article. If you want the whole detail, go over to theatlantic.com, theatlantic.com, and plug into their search engine, Steve Clemons, C-L-E-M-O-N-S, and thank God for the Saudis. Here's the first line of the article. Thank God for the Saudis and Prince Bandar, John McCain told CNN's Canley Crowley in January of 2014. Thank God for the Saudis and Prince Bandar and our Qatari friends. McCain was praising Prince Bandar bin Salman for supporting forces fighting against Bashar al-Assad's region in Syria. McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham had previously met with Bandar to encourage the Saudis to arm the Syrian rebels. And then, you know, they go on to point out that that these two of the most successful factions fighting Assad's forces are the al-Nusra Front and the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, ISIS. And, you know, this was, they were funded because John McCain and Lindsey Graham asked them, you know, asked Prince Bandar to fund them. So that's the deal. What was your other point? That was the second one. What was the first one?
ISIL.
Oh, ISIL. I honestly don't know why the president refers to it as ISIL rather than ISIS or IS. I think, though, that it's going to standardize on IS, the Islamic State, because that's all they're calling themselves now. Increasingly, the media is calling them IS, or the Islamic State. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know. I think maybe the military is using that phrase, and presidents love to use military acronyms. But I mean, over at Fox, they think it's because he's secretly a Muslim and he's somehow supporting the Levant or something. But that's nonsense. Todd, thanks for the call. Jim in Muskegon, Michigan. Hey, Jim.
Tom, it's absolutely a pleasure to be on your show. And I just wish that this more people would watch your program. You're telling it the way it is, buddy. So we really appreciate what you're doing. And Bernie Sanders is a real treat to be on, too.
Thank you.
I wish that Bernie would run for president.
Yeah, well, he may well. He may well.
Yes.
Jim,
yes.
Was that all you wanted to say?
Basically, I just wanted to say what's scary to me is the brainwashing that goes on at Fox News.
Oh, yeah.
With all these so-called experts that got us into this mess being trotted out, encouraging Obama and us to be more proactive. And if we followed their advice, we'd be involved in 10 wars right now, not just two.
Well, keep in mind, there, you know,
have any credibility that got us in this mess in the first place.
The second largest stockholder of Fox News is the Saudi prince Al-Talawid or Al-Talal, whatever, however you say it. And, the second largest stockholder in Fox News, the second largest investor behind Rupert Murdoch is a Saudi prince. So you're not going to hear criticism of Saudi Arabia on Fox News. You're not even going to hear a discussion of Saudi Arabia's role in this. You will never hear a mention of how many Saudis were involved in 9/11. I mean, it's just all kinds of, you know, Saudi Arabia just gets excised from their coverage. So, it's not surprising that Americans who watch Fox News are just totally uninformed and don't know what the hell's going on. Jim, thanks for the call. Donald in Chicago. Hey, Donald, you wanted to talk about the president calling out this plan in his speech?
Yes, I do. And much of what you were saying, I wish he would say, because the American people don't know what the plan was that Bin Laden had. It just puts everything together. Too bad he can't come out and say that. But you know what really kills me, Tom? The reason why these countries don't feel threatened.
Oop, our caller just dropped. Okay, and we only have 10 seconds. So I'm sorry, I don't know what dropped you, but your point is well taken, and I would love the president to come out and say, here, let me tell you what happened back in 2000, 2001, 2004. This is how Bin Laden played George Bush. And this is why Obama's not going to say it. The president, you know, there's this old, it's president's club thing. You know, one president doesn't criticize another president. And they certainly don't prosecute other presidents. And this goes back to the Gerry Ford administration. And so we don't criticize or prosecute Republican presidents. Now, we try to impeach Democratic presidents, but we don't criticize Republican presidents. And that's why Obama's not going to say it tonight.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And in the studio with me, Scotty Nell Hughes, director of the Tea Party News Network and the author of the new book, Roar! The New Conservative Woman Speaks Out.
That was an awesome roar right there, by the way. That was probably one of the most manliest, strongest roars I've heard yet. Right.
Well, congratulations on your book,
Thank
Scotty.
Thank you.
It's great. Complete with blurbs from what, Grover Norquist?
It's good. Yes, it
Where's
does.
Grover? He's got to be
oddly,
in here, right?
Oddly enough. You know, here's the funny thing. You know, honestly, if you read the background, you want to get your phone lines lit up, just read the back. If people want to know who I am, read the back. You want to get them angry?
Okay. The media, you're talking about the bottom or the top?
The top.
Okay.
Of
top.
Who I am.
I'm a gun-fearing, God-fearing, gun-toting, baby-loving, traditional marriage-believing, SUV-driving, I don't care about my carbon footprint, border-securing, Benghazi truth-seeking, Fox News and the Blaze TV watching, lamestream media smacking, sit by sweet tea with a big gulp drinking, rhino hunting, target of IRS auditing, one nation under God pledging mom.
Did you just hear progressives' heads just explode? Because I know liberals listen to your show because you're the number one liberal talk show host in the country.
We have a lot of Christians who listen.
We've got a lot of
gun owners.
I'm just saying.
Target shooter. We got a lot of people with babies. I have three. I mean, they're grown up now. But
exactly. But you know what each one of those means. It's pro-life. But that's right there. Exactly. You want to know who I am. But that's why we get along.
I'd like to know the truth of Benghazi. It seems that the truth is that there was no there.
We had no strategy. Ever heard
border
that before?
Border securing, that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't think East Berlin was really a good model.
Well, I don't think they're trying to make East Berlin be Texas right now. I think what they're doing is trying to keep the illegals out of this country. And that's the one thing, you know, here on the eve of 9/11.
Stopping and inviting them.
Huh? That's a great idea. Stop inviting them, President Obama.
Yeah.
Why sitting there incentivized? See, we get along. I wish Congress got along as well we did.
I mean, you know, ever since Reagan said, you know, I'm not going to enforce the laws against white people hiring illegals.
Now, listen, Reagan admits that was a mistake he did. You know,
Reagan's dead.
You keep talking to him. You brought him up. But, you know, that's the great thing about the immigration debate. They go back and look at Reagan. Oh, look, Reagan did it. Yeah, and Reagan regretted it. And Reagan thought that would solve the immigration issue. It didn't solve it at all. He gave amnesty to everybody here. So why does President Obama, why are the Republicans the rhino Republicans?
That Reagan regretted that. I mean, by the time he never talked about it when he was in office. And after he left office, he almost immediately had Alzheimer's so bad he wasn't doing public.
Yeah. I think at some point they quoted him somewhere that he actually said that was one thing that he regretted doing was making that decision right there. We're going to find that. We're going to Google it.
That would surprise me. Okay.
But let's
talk about ISIS. The president tonight is going to give a talk on ISIS. And I'm of the opinion that, you know, a series of largely Republican presidents have totally blown this thing. No, I'll give you the reason.
You're going to go to an example.
Start out. Jimmy Carter in 1977.
Wasn't he a Democrat?
Yeah, he was a Democrat.
Okay.
Jimmy Carter, do you have the clip, Shano? Shano's going to get it.
Awesome.
Jimmy Carter said, we are going to stop being dependent on these guys in the Middle East. This is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This was after the Arab oil embargo that caused inflation in the United States to go up to 15%. This is, and here's what Jimmy Carter said. Listen to this.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them. What I have to say to you now about energy is simple and vitally important. Point one, I am tonight setting a clear goal for the energy policy of the United States. Beginning this moment, this nation will never use more foreign oil than we did in 1977. Never.
There you go. Never. We're going to stop using more foreign oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then he said, and we're going to generate 20% of our electricity by the year 2000 from solar power. Here it is.
Moreover, I will soon submit legislation to Congress calling for the creation of this nation's first solar bank, which will help us achieve the crucial goal of 20% of our energy coming from solar power by the year 2000.
Now, he was successful in doing that. He got that legislation passed. Both of those pieces of legislation passed. Ronald Reagan undid them. Ronald Reagan took the solar collectors off the roof of the White House. Ronald Reagan was brought into power by oil money. Ronald Reagan said, we're going to increase our dependence on oil, not decrease it. And we did. He was successful in doing that. And I would say that if Reagan had not cut a deal with the Ayatollahs to hold the hostages so that Jimmy Carter lost the election, if that had not happened, and you've got the president of Iran on record, Bonnie Sauter at the time talking about this, if that had not happened and Carter's policies had stood, we would not be in the Middle East right now at all.
Okay, let's back it up. First of all, as a wise man quoted about a minute ago, Ronald Reagan's dead. But since we're going back again, just saying, don't you hate when words come back to you? Let's go back to, first of all, if Jimmy Carter, if you want to sit there and say that he lost or the Democrats lost control and Ronald Reagan was able to come in, who truly Ronald Reagan followed in the footsteps of Barry Goldwater. I mean, he's a very strong.
No, he didn't.
Well,
I mean, he talked that line, but he actually raised taxes 19 times on working
people.
He
was elected on a Barry Goldwater type platform. The conservatives, that's what they believed he was going to be like.
Right.
Okay. Jimmy Carter did not lose because of that. Jimmy Carter, if those policies were so true, if he had actually put actions into them, he would have been reelected. There's
he
not
did.
A single person.
He did. There are houses all over
the country.
So then
why wasn't he reelected? Why wasn't why did he lose?
Well, 6 months out of the election, he was 5-6 points ahead. He was going to be reelected, but then the hostages were taken in Iran, and the news started covering it every single night. Carter made the mistake of asking the country to pray for it, not knowing that Bill Casey had gone to Paris and cut a deal with the Iranians to hold those hostages until after the election.
It had nothing to do with the people that were waiting for hours upon hours at gas stations trying to get gas.
That wasn't going on in 1980. That was going on back in 73, 74, 75.
Okay. Well, like I said, if he was so popular back then, he would have been reelected. It doesn't matter about the hostages. That not one issue can sit there and take some down.
It absolutely
unless you want to sit there and say Katrina's the one that took the Republicans out of power.
Katrina hurt Bush, but I think it hurt Bush more with minority voters than it did with white voters.
Well, then let's talk about the president right now. Then fine. Then let the president open up Keystone Pipeline. The number one thing.
What does
right
that
now,
have to do with anything?
100%. If you're sitting there saying, you know, Carter was so great because he wanted to make us less dependent on foreign oil, the number one thing that would help us make less dependent on foreign oil, hence why the Middle East is such a powder keg, would be opening up the Keystone Pipeline.
I hate to shatter your illusions.
Okay, my illusions.
But we actually have refineries coming from the Keystone Pipeline right now. We have for a couple of decades. They're in Missouri. They're in Kansas. They're in Indiana. They're in Michigan.
So then what's the big debate about?
And those refineries are making gasoline and diesel fuel for the United States. What the owners of the Keystone Pipeline, TransCanada, have said, and you can read it on their website, is that if they can complete their website, their pipeline all the way down to the Gulf Coast so that they can refine and export that oil and gasoline, prices for oil and gasoline in the United States will go up 15 cents a gallon on average. They're quite open about it. The reason they're trying to get to the water is so they can put this stuff in tankers. It's not for
and they
America.
Wouldn't want to keep it here.
They don't want to take it across.
No,
the international market is huge.
So it would not help us in any way here in the United States.
That's correct.
Okay. And it's not me saying this.
This is TransCanada saying this.
Okay.
They're not doing that pipeline. They're doing it for export. They're not doing it for the
so
American
it's
market.
Not all about saving the owls or all the environmentalists that are sitting. The reason why, you know, it's the environmental lobby that's keeping the Keystone Pipeline closed. It's not the economists. It's not the people sitting here talking about it. It's the environmentalists that are keeping it closed.
To some extent.
There's also
people who are concerned about global warming.
Well, it's environmentalists. So it has nothing to do about raising taxes.
They're
not here fighting it.
My biggest concern about Keystone, and then I want to get back to ISIS. My biggest concern about Keystone is that we get to keep the poison. And England and China and Brazil get the gasoline, right? We refine it here. When you refine something where you refine it, you get all the downwind poison. So Cancer Alley in Texas and Louisiana is going to triple in size as a result of the Keystone Pipeline. It's much more toxic than any of the
foreign oil. Then why do the people want it there?
Because
why do these people want
the Koch
so
brothers are promoting
just,
because
yeah,
no the Koch brothers own those refineries. The Koch brothers are the second largest landowner of American landowners of oil sands up in Canada. They are pushing this thing because they can make as much as some estimates are over $100 billion. If you had $100 billion in the line, wouldn't you spend a few hundred million
to buy politicians and
get PR firms out there saying we need this for American energy independence? No, we don't. We need it so that the Koch brothers can make $100 billion.
Works for George Soros.
No, it doesn't. Warren Buffett. He invests in things that cost him money. Warren Buffett invests in things that are going to raise his tax. You want to stick around?
I do. This is fun.
Okay. Scotty Nell Hughes is with us. We will take some calls, too. We'll see how this thing goes. Scotty's new book is called Roar, The New Conservative Woman Speaks Out.
I left my Kevlar at home.
Okay. We'll be right back. 15 minutes past you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Scotty's book goes on sale nationwide next week, although you can find it on the usual online sources right now. R-O-A-R, Roar, by Scotty Nell Hughes. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, let's pick up a couple of calls here, Scotty. Okay?
Ooh, yay, I'm excited.
Robin in Kingston, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You are on the air with me and Scotty Nell Hughes.
Hi, Tom. This question actually is an overall thing about conservatism. One of the questions never asked about, touching back to what you're talking about, George Bush getting elected the first time, one of the questions that was never asked about Herskowitz's question, as quoted by Cindy,
right,
was what would the military-industrial complex do when Bush announced that he would go to back into Iraq before he got elected? And when I say the military-industrial complex, I'm including obviously all the military providers, the corporations, the Pentagon itself, and the politicians who are owned by that.
Okay.
Also, I know Barbara Honegger. I know Honegger, and I'm right on the Casey thing. And the third thing is that Carter was set up to fail because there were dozens of fully laden oil tankers sitting off of New York City, out of sight. I used to be an air traffic controller up in the Northeast, and the pilots talked about this all the time. They needed to control Carter, and part of that whole oil embargo thing was absolutely contrived.
Huh. So interesting.
I guess you can put all of that in a pipe and smoke it. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if they're embargoing our oil, they might park it off our shore, but they won't bring it in for delivery. Robin, excellent point. You got the Cindy clip? The clip that Robin is referring to, Scotty, is this was not a public statement. In 1999, when George Bush was planning to run for president, but it was not yet public, his father and mother hired Mickey Herskowitz, who was a family friend, 20 years or more, lived in Texas, well-known Texas writer, and he ghostwrites books for people in addition to writing his own books. They hired him to write George Bush's autobiography. It's called A Charge to Keep. It's in bookstores right now. He did 100 interviews that he audiotaped with George W. Bush, or 100 hours, rather, and he wrote the first draft of the book. And he told a reporter the following. Here's a verbatim quote. This is, again, from 1999.
As a matter of fact, in interviews in 1999 with respected journalist and longtime Bush family friend Mickey Herskowitz,
this is a testimony,
then Governor George Bush stated,
under oath,
"One of the keys to being seen as a great leader is to be seen as commander-in-chief. My father had all this political capital built up when he drove the Iraqis out of Kuwait, and he wasted it. If I have a chance to invade, if I had that much capital, I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to get everything passed that I want to get passed, and I'm going to have a successful presidency," end quote.
So here's Bush in, you know, 2 years before he's elected, saying, if I get elected, I'm going to invade Iraq, and I'm going to do it so I can privatize Social Security, which he tried to do in 2005. He said, I got all this political capital. I want to privatize Social Security.
I love how you're sitting there taking the stretch from Iraq to privatizing Social Security.
No, he did.
I'm sorry, in
1979, when he ran for Congress in Texas, that was his sole platform.
Was to privatize Social Security. But
that's,
I love,
correct,
how you're tying it now to Iraq. It has nothing to do with the chemical weapons. It has nothing to do with the
dictator. There were no chemical weapons.
There were chemical weapons.
No, there weren't.
Yes, they have. They've said, you know, as much as you can sit there and say they've proven there isn't, I can prove that there is. They've seen the trucks that went into Syria. They sat there and saw them.
Nobody saw them.
You went to Iraq.
Maybe
on
Fox News they saw
them. Okay, well, we've seen the videos of the chemical trucks, and that's the thing you have to look at. We can sit there and talk both sides of it. I'm not going to defend Bush.
Right.
I have my own issues with him, too.
20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more. Tom Hartman here with you, and Scotty Nell Hughes with me, the author of the new book, Roar, The New Conservative Woman Speaks Out. And Scotty, shall we take some phone calls?
We can. And let me just make this disclaimer.
Yes.
Tom, I've always said this about you. I've always respected this about you. You're probably one of the smartest men I know on both sides of the aisle.
Thank you.
You know details. You know history. You know your research. You've eat, breathed, and lived it for 30 years. But, and this is, for anybody listening, I was like, oh, she's just a blonde talking. The one thing about you, you're so smart that you take one little fact and twist it. So it's not until I get home tonight, I'm reading my Twitter feed or watching people like, this is where it's twisted. Now, whether you do that on purpose, I don't think you do. I just think there's one thing, there's usually one little fact that separates you and I in opinion when it comes to, when you're talking.
It may be. Certainly the narrative that I'm laying out is not the conventional wisdom narrative. The conventional wisdom narrative is not that if Reagan had not blown up Carter's policies, we would not be in the Middle East. You know, I'll tell you, that's my position.
I hate to tell you, we're going to be in the Middle East no matter what. The Bible says it. Allah says it. Whatever book you read, the Middle East is a powder
keg. That's because all
those
religions started in the Middle East.
Well, that's why they started.
If you want to start quoting, Buddhism, or you want to start quoting Hinduism, then, you know, hey, we're going to be in Bangalore.
There's nothing that's going to bring peace to the Middle East. Israel's never going to be at peace. Let's just be realistic about it. The question is, how do we keep people contained in their own and not going after each other?
I think we need to stop pouring fuel on that fire, but
I would rather pour it in my gas tank for less prices, and that would only happen if we opened up things like the Keystone Pipeline.
How about pouring electricity into your gas? Well, no.
Have you tried this electricity stuff? Okay, let's talk about
an electric car?
Actually, Tesla, one of my favorite stocks. But oh my goodness, did they just found out that their battery at 10,000 miles just goes kaputs? And, I mean, the problem is we need the technology to advance, but
well,
I don't want to use taxpayer funds.
$5 billion into this new battery factory.
Well, and that's why I'm happy with private funds. The problem is the things like the stimulus where we sit here and take taxpayer funds and pour into it.
So we never should have invented the Internet.
Al Gore take taxpayer funds to invent it?
He actually voted for the legislation that created the Internet.
Okay,
yeah,
gotcha. On that side of it. Yeah. Well, like I said, you know the facts. And take a little bit and we disagree
on it. So we shouldn't have invented Velcro. We shouldn't have invented the transistor. These were all government-funded things, the integrated circuit.
I do not believe in sitting there and using it as a way to stimulate our commoning, to use it as an excuse. Was Velcro the excuse used to sit there and bring us out of the Great Depression or whenever it was done?
No, building the roads all across the United States was the excuse.
Yeah,
and
that worked. That's not what brought us out of the Great Depression. A little thing called a world war brought us out.
The biggest government spending program of the 20th century.
Okay, well,
it was huge government stimulus.
Well, yeah, because it was actually defending ourselves because the people came onto our land and bombed us, and so we got involved.
Yeah, but it was government stimulus that got us out of the Great
Depression. We're also defending our border. We're defending our own. There's a big difference between that and let's go, put solar panels on the top of, the Sonic.
Okay, so during World War II, if we spent $1 million on bombs and then we dropped them on Hitler, our return on investment was zero, right? We lost that money. On the other hand, if we had taken that $1 million, as Roosevelt had been doing earlier, and we built the TVA or we built the Hoover Dam, those are still generating electricity 70 years later.
And Hitler and his people didn't want to come over and hurt Americans?
Well, I'm not saying that we shouldn't.
I mean, last time I checked, they did bomb Pearl Harbor to get us involved.
Well, that was the Japan, not the Nazis. But I'm not trying to relitigate World War II. What I'm saying is that war is an effective stimulant for an economy, but it's the least effective. The most effective is where you take the same amount of money and you spend it and you invest it rather than spending it. War is an expense. Building roads and bridges and dams are an investment.
So how did that stimulus project work out for our economy?
Well, it took us from losing 700,000 jobs a month to a net average of about 120,000 jobs a month being gained.
Yeah, we're going to sit there and factor in certain things.
Obama saved us in the Great Depression.
This is where we have a little bit of an issue on this one. Let's back to our call.
Back to ISIS. Susan in Palmyra, New York. Hey, Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I've almost forgotten what I was going to say. With all this other talk.
Hey, we're back to ISIS, right?
Yes. Well, I wanted to talk about how we in this country will always want to strike back when we are attacked. Like in 9/11, it's almost like we don't care who we strike or try to strike. It's like we want to get even.
I think this is Susan, this is a very human instinct. You know, when Marius Vander, whatever his name was, Slug, I think, burned the German parliament building, the Reichstag Begüge, Hitler ran down while it was on fire, stood in front, grabbed a microphone and said, "This is a sign from God that I'm supposed to be the chancellor and take on the evil communists and Jews who did this." And, you know, bang, Germany was off to the races. They were under attack. Same thing with 9/11.
Yes, and I don't, just like with the death penalty, so many of us want to...
Oh, it's revenge.
Murder,
yeah.
To me, it doesn't make sense when we say murder is wrong, then we murder. But
I get it. I think we're starting to wander far afield, but Susan, good point. Scotty, you can feel free to respond to that. B, I'm curious what you want the president to say tonight.
First of all, I think it's very inappropriate that the president is even speaking tonight. How dare he?
He's only the president of the United States.
How dare he on prime time the night before 9/11? You know, we have very few holidays. I don't know. I remember you probably know where you were on 9/11. I know where I was. If we're sitting here dealing with the same beast that attacked us, even though this is the little brother.
It's not a
beast.
It's like 10, 20,000 people.
Islamic terrorists are beasts.
Smaller than the
They
mafia.
Have declared that they want to kill us. They hate Americans. They hate Western civilization.
I'm not afraid of them.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm glad you're not afraid.
I'm not afraid of them.
I'm not afraid of them either, but I also want to have a country that's, you know, has a good defense on it. That's always been very
important. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Scotty Nell Hughes, her new book is Roar. Available online right now and in bookstores next week. The New Conservative Woman Speaks Out. Thank you, Scotty.
Thank you for having me.
Great to see you. We'll be back. This is interesting. Having Scotty on and, you know, frequently having conservatives on this program, the thing that increasingly I'm getting, and I used to think that the difference between conservatives and liberals was worldview. You know, we just see the world fundamentally differently. The old notion that conservatives are that liberals are looking for a nurturing world and conservatives are looking for a me, my, mine world. But talking to Scotty, what I get is that we're operating off different databases. I mean, we literally have a different information base. And for that, I think you have to blame the news media. There are all kinds of conservatives in America who don't actually know facts and history. And there's no doubt there are liberals, myself included, who don't know the conservative take on facts and history. I find it just fascinating. Anyhow. Oh, just a reminder, too, by the way, it's not on my one sheet, but this Friday I will be speaking at the Yes Magazine Conference in Seattle. And that's Friday night. And if you want to show up, if you're in the Seattle area or in the Pacific Northwest and you want to come to Seattle or anywhere and you want an excuse to come to Seattle, go to Yes Magazine, YESmagazine.org, and you can sign up. So. Should be a lot of fun. Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. Speaking of Seattle, hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. I'm looking forward to talking to you in person again at Town Hall on Friday night. That should be
a
great event. So, yeah, I really encourage folks in the Seattle area especially to come on out for that event. There's going to be some music and food. It's going to be a great event.
Yep.
And the reason I called is to talk about, give people a sort of quick update on several efforts to repeal the Seattle $15 an hour minimum wage.
Oh, geez.
And there have already, been two efforts by conservative groups to put a ballot measure on in Seattle.
Yeah. Surprise,
to,
surprise.
Repeal it.
Mark, that's not the topic that we're talking about right now. I want to get back to the topic of ISIS. But, you know, give us a call later when we are on that, and I would like to get to it. Thanks a lot for the call, though. Doug in Boise, Idaho. Hey, Doug, you want to talk about ISIS?
Yeah, I was wondering. Oh, I to one thing really quick. I was wondering if you were familiar with the Young Turks, and then I was also.
Oh yeah, I've known Cenk for years. He's a good guy.
And then
they got a great show.
What your thoughts? Yes, I do. What your thoughts about them going into Lebanon is?
Cenk is going to Lebanon?
No, ISIS went across the border and beheaded somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, ISIS is going to do everything they possibly can in the region. They're going to scare as many people as much as possible. They know that if they can be the Lex Luthor of the territory, that they will cow people, they will frighten people into letting them in. And you know, the Iraqi army when they took Mosul, the Iraqi army literally fled, even though they were 10 times larger than the ISIS army. Because these guys had convinced them that we are crazy people, we will kill you, we don't care if we die or not. And, they're trying to create that persona across the region with some success. And this is why I keep saying, this is not a problem that America can fix. This is a problem that America in large part caused, but it has to be fixed by local people on the ground who just want their damn country back. And, we should be supporting civil society. We should be supporting efforts to get rid of ISIS. But it's damn hard when you've got Saudi Arabia and Qatar and UAE and other countries in the region who have, sheikhs and rich people who are supporting ISIS.
Right. It feels like the beginning of World War One to me.
Yeah, I don't disagree, although I am more concerned about Ukraine as a possible trigger point for World War One. The way that we're playing this thing by shoving NATO into Ukraine after George Herbert Walker Bush promised Gorbachev, you know, if you let the Soviet Union dissolve, we will not put NATO on your borders. And now, you know, Obama is breaking that. Bush broke it too in 2004. Bush put NATO troops, you know, allowed Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. Estonia has a border with Russia to join NATO, and that had to make the Russians crazy. So, that, you know, it's just a bunch of things here that we're in a very, very messy time. And it's a full moon today. Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Flo in Sunrise, Florida. Hey, Flo, you wanted to talk about something Scotty said?
Yes, that's her name, Scotty, author of Roar.
Yeah.
She said something negative about using taxpayer dollars, but I wonder how many trillions we've spent over in Iraq getting the oil out. But, Tom, I wanted to ask you something about NORAD. I'm from Rochester. I mean, we lived there for 33 years when Bob worked at Kodak.
Mm-hmm.
And that plane that went down and crashed in Jamaica, it was a past weekend. Do you remember that plane?
A small plane?
He lost consciousness, I guess.
Yeah.
And he was a wealthy business person from Rochester, owned Xerox Square and everything.
Right.
But did you notice how NORAD followed that plane all the way down? But on 9/11, they weren't around.
Right.
Anyhow, that really ticked me off. Anyhow, about 9/11.
Well, on 9/11, they were doing training exercises, and there was apparently some confusion about whether this was an exercise or a real. But something fishy was going on.
That plane that crashed in Jamaica. But anyhow, yeah, we're using taxpayer dollars, you know, over in Iraq
for war.
And the oil right now is going on international ports, but also ISIS or ISIL, whatever you want to call them. On the black market, they're selling oil.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they sold, that's what they said, $800 million worth of oil to Turkey at $60 a barrel compared to $100.
Yeah. Yeah, they're undercutting the market, but they're making millions. And you're absolutely right. And they're capturing oil fields as they capture cities. Mosul is one of the biggest of the oil-producing regions in Iraq, and they now control that. So you're absolutely right, Flo. And then we're spending our money to try to go to war, which is just, it's nuts. Flo, thank you for the call. David in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I wanted to correct some things about Scotty. Scotty, I am a typing designer. I have been a typing designer for almost 26 years.
Right.
I am heavily involved in the oil and gas. And by the way, I am fighting tooth and nail as best I can about the CO2 problem. One of my big pet peeves with our industry is that we don't, you know, we're based on peer-reviewed science, and yet we have these faction of people that seem to deny that this is peer review science.
Right.
As look, just accept it, get ahead of it, start taking the CO2 out of the gas stream, make it a profit center instead of trying to sit there and say, oh, it doesn't exist.
Right.
But the biggest problem that the oil and gas industry is facing right now is the financialization that's going on. The only people that are moving anything at all right now are the people who can write their own financials, like Chesapeake and those companies that have resources that they can underwrite. For instance, Chesapeake, back in 2010, 2011, sold $1.5 billion of Texas shell play to China. That's how they financialized their ability to go out and buy more property and install gas plants.
Right.
And this whole thing, I've incurred, as a pipeliner, I've incurred the wrath of the people there, because I've dared to say, what does energy independence mean? If you guys are all about, let's sell this abroad, we're going to drill everything we can, extract everything we can, and sell it abroad, how does that make us independent?
Right.
And where is the concern for the future of our country?
Yeah.
We need to think about what's going to our grandchildren, our children, our grandchildren. We shouldn't be digging everything out of the ground. We should be buying everything abroad and pumping it back in.
Yeah.
And the industry, I don't understand why the industry is so scared, because even if we put a solar panel on every roof, a windmill on every field, a wave generator in every body of water, and geothermal on every possible source, we would still need oil and gas for the next 100 years, just nothing else, because the way of our housing, our obsolete housing, is built.
I agree with you, David, this is the different database thing. I mean, yeah, I think that anybody who watches Fox News actually believes that Keystone XL is being built to bring Canadian oil to American markets. And the fact of the matter is that Canadian oil is already coming to American markets in the Midwest through a pipeline called the Keystone Pipeline. And it has been for 15, 20 years. and we're refining it, and it's reducing the cost of gas in the Midwest. And TransCanada, the company that owns Keystone, says, you know, right out loud, if this thing is built all the way to the Gulf Coast, we'll be able to start exporting that gasoline and oil rather than leaving it here in the U.S., and that'll raise gasoline prices and diesel fuel prices here in the United States. And that never makes it onto Fox News. And so the people who watch Fox News just don't understand. I think it's amazing. Thanks a lot for the call, David. Jim in Concord, North Carolina. Hey, Jim, what do you want to hear from the president?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. If you don't mind, first I'd like to respond to Scotty.
Yeah, we just have a minute to break.
Okay, when she said my head was going to explode, I was thinking, no, it's not. I just feel sorry for her in about 20 or 40 years when her kids or grandkids say, Grandma, you really didn't care?
Yeah.
But what I want
to
hear
let's not pick on individuals here. I think Scotty is well-intentioned, frankly. I know her. I disagree with her politically, but I think she's well-intentioned. This is where I said, I think we're operating off different databases.
This is it.
Yeah.
We definitely are off of different databases. But what I'd like to hear tonight is something I heard, I think, on your show last week from Alan Grayson,
mm-hmm.
which was, this is a regional conflict. This is a regional war, and yeah, ISIS is trying to pull us in. Let's not get suckered in. I think Grayson said something to the effect of, get all the countries that want ISIS stopped to throw in, I think he said 5,000, and we could have been 10,000 troops,
right?
And let them do the fighting. Let
right.
the Iraqis do the
yeah,
fighting.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a regional conflict. We should let countries in the region deal with it. I'm totally with you. Oh, Dick Cheney's on TV right now blasting Obama. Oh, jeez. Thanks,
You're
Jim.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Can you just imagine yesterday the Republicans got together with Dick Cheney? Who was the genius who said, hey, the Middle East is screwed up. Let's get the guy who screwed it up and ask him what we should do. Yeah.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Liam in Redding, California. You're watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. You're on the air, Liam.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hey.
Top of the morning to you.
And
I have
I
have a question for Scotty, even though she's not there. But if all the conservatives like to keep referring to that World War II brought us out of the Great Depression. My question has to do with not just I'm not the only one that's asked this question. Several very prominent economists have asked the question is, if that brought us out of World War II when we put 16 million veterans back in the labor market, why did we not immediately return to the Great Depression?
Well, to some extent, we did. The late 40s, like 49 through 51, we were in a pretty severe recession. And it kind of limped along through the first few years of the 50s pretty badly. And I just know this from my own family history. I mean, my dad was really, really struggling because he came back and he had all these GI Bill benefits. But then mom got pregnant with me. And so he had to drop out of college and they moved to Lansing and he tried to get a job. And he ended up being a vacuum cleaner salesman and a door to door encyclopedia salesman before he finally got a job, a union job in a tool and die shop and was able to live the American dream for the next 40 years. But it was Eisenhower's deficit spending on the interstate highway system in large part and his continuation of a number of New Deal programs that and then the other big one was the GI Bill that by saying to these returning vets, these 16 million returning vets or whatever the number, I don't know the exact number, but I'll take you at your word, saying to these returning vets, you don't have to go into the job market. We're going to let you go into the job market more slowly because we will not only pay the full tuition for you to go to college, but we will also pay you for your room and board. We'll pay you a stipend. I think my dad was getting $200 a month in addition to his college tuition to go to college. And
but that's the antithesis of what she was saying.
Okay. What was she saying that's opposite that?
That's brought us out of the Great Depression and everything was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the World War II. Well, this is where conservatives like to have their cake and eat it, too. And I think that a lot of them just don't think it through. You say Roosevelt got us out of the Great Depression. He cut the unemployment rate more than in half. He was putting America back together, back to work. He was overcoming the Dust Bowl by planting trees. I mean, all kinds of good stuff he was doing. And they'll say, yeah, but that didn't get us out of the Great Depression. It was World War II. And then you say, well, yeah, and World War II was the biggest government spending you know, program, I think so far in history, although maybe Iraq and Afghanistan are rivaling it, for no other reason that they're so much longer than World War II was. I think we were only in World War II for, what, 4 years, from 41 to 45? And at that point, they don't know what to say, because you say, yeah, World War II is a giant government stimulus, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, hadn't thought of that. But, yeah, good point, Liam. Thanks a lot for the call. 15 seconds? Okay. Liam, thank you for the call. I just, in my 15 seconds, it's not fair to get a call around. But this is what I would like to hear the president say tonight. I would like to hear him say, we are not a nation of fearful cowards. We are not a nation of little people who cower in the corner. We are not like Dick Cheney and George W. Bush. We are not, we do not seek vengeance stupidly. This is a regional conflict. Countries in the region should be involved. Some of these countries are allies of ours, and we will work with them to help them defend themselves. But this is their problem. And to the extent that we caused it, we need to do remediation. But that doesn't mean we fight a war. Nayday! Nayday! Oh, yes, Bob Nay with the Talk Radio News Service. TalkRadioNews.com, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Free-Don.org. Hey, Congressman, how you doing?
I'm good. I'd rather it be Nay Day than Cheney Day.
Yeah, well, I was just looking at the CNN on the monitor in here, and there was Dick Cheney, and the chyron underneath said, Cheney criticizes Obama. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course. Why are you playing this garbage on television?
Somebody's listening to him again, and it's just a few. He actually did go to Capitol Hill. He huddled with the House Republicans. He said Obama wasn't prepared for the terrorist threat posed by the group, and he urged the Republicans to support a more muscular national defense.
Right.
So he went there, you know, offering that, you know, they should spend more money.
Has anybody pointed out that this was the guy, you know, when the handoff happened, Al Gore said to Dick Cheney, your number one priority has to be Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. And Dick Cheney was put in charge of the counterterrorism task force by George W. Bush in mid-January of 2001. That counterterrorism task force did not meet until the first week of September of 2001, about 4 days before 9/11. And so all that time, Dick Cheney was completely ignoring. He was in charge of attending to and responding to bin Laden and al-Qaeda, and he completely ignored it. This is the guy who set us up to be hit on 9/11. And who was the genius in the Republican Party who said, hey, you know, the Middle East is screwed up. Let's get the guy who screwed it up in to tell us what to do.
I don't understand, you know, and of course they dismantled the Iraqi police force and army, totally dismantled them, put them unemployed, gave them their weapons and scattered them across the country. We've never been able to remake them, you know, all this time. I mean, and on and on and on.
Yeah.
I did want to mention they're turning to him now. There is one other thing, too, and I think this is a really important point because I served on the Hill, and I know what they're doing right now. They're going through a great strain because as Speaker Boehner criticized the president about, you know, where's your strategy? Well, tonight, when the president goes primetime, let's face one fact, too. You can only lay out so many details of a strategy. Otherwise, you might as well just call ISIS and say, here's what we're doing. So, you know, there are some things the president obviously, you know, cannot mention. But the one item that Speaker Boehner liked was arming the Syrian rebels. And we know John McCain actually went over and met with the wrong group of Syrian rebels at one point in time.
Yeah.
But so that is one thing that John Boehner talked about, you know, that he would support. However, there's a real problem now because the Republicans, Mitch McConnell in the Senate, you know, they want to have a vote on this about, you know, the money and arming them. And the problem is that really they don't want to vote.
Yeah.
They're saying that, Tom, but they don't want to vote.
No, they don't want to be on record going into the election because it could be used against
them. They really don't.
Them.
They have a split conference. They have some. They do have some doves in the Republican Party, and they have some hawks that think that doesn't even go far enough. So they're going to, you know, they're going to gear up to vote on the president's plan in a sense, because when the president talks about arming the Syrian rebels, then the Congress is going to have a vote on it. But this is not going to bode well. They're going to have bad internal arguments. So this is not a leg up. This is a very serious issue, and the president, I think, is going to, you know, mention obviously what you've talked about, which is the big important point, our allies. You know, where are the Saudis? Where are the Kuwaitis, the Qataris?
Well, apparently the Saudis are running a TV telethon right now raising money for ISIS.
Well, the Saudis are so afraid. I lived in Saudi Arabia for a year. You know, the Saudis are, they have a business kingdom. That's what they have. They're very afraid of the religious element. And Saudi Arabia loves to give lip service and then fund money to the terror groups. They do it all the time. They've done it traditionally because of the Wahhabism in their own country. And right now, the Saudis are giving lip service to the United States. Oh, you know, we're there. We're going to pray for you. But they're not providing what they need to. So hopefully Secretary of State Kerry can really, you know, put the twist to this thing and get them to be where they need to be. Otherwise, you know, we don't want to go this alone. So I think the president's going to mention the coalition that he needs to put together.
Yeah, I think his emphasis is going to be on who he was able to schmooze with at the conference. What was that conference a couple of days ago? The NATO conference.
And now I did want to mention up on the Hill, because I think this is, you know, a interesting vote. Debbie Stabenow in the Senate has the Paycheck Fairness Act.
Good on her.
You know, that would help, of course, reduce gender discrimination. Women would be able to negotiate for equal pay.
Right.
And it'll be interesting to see how the Republicans will, you know, react to that in the Senate, too.
Right. Agreed.
You know, the Republicans have a problem up on the Hill right now because they're trying to get out of there with the least amount of damage. Ted Cruz is using the shutdown word. You know, he wants certain things in the bills. And so they're going to have to deal with Ted Cruz because of the fiasco, of course, the previous time when Boehner did shut the government down for about 16 days, and they don't want to go through that again. So Ted Cruz is going to raise his head to...
Boehner did that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Congressman. I mean, you're the one who knows the politics, and particularly the Republican politics, having been a Republican member of Congress all those years. Was it not the case that Boehner shut down the government out of the House of Representatives because Ted Cruz in the Senate activated the base to the point that he couldn't resist?
Oh, absolutely. John Boehner had fumed privately about the fact that, you know, okay, put up or shut up, I did it. The base went crazy on this thing. You know, they couldn't get it accomplished in the Senate. And then they looked to the House. Look, Ted Cruz was walking across that Capitol meeting with people in the Republican conference, you know, directly
in the House of Representatives.
Yes, in the House of Representatives, which is directly going right into Boehner's face.
That's got to really PO John Boehner, doesn't it?
Oh, it did. And then he had to make some type of move because John Boehner's going to win his reelection in Ohio no matter what. But, you know, the members of the House Republican conference vote on him for speaker, and they were demanding blood. And Ted Cruz, you know, ginned them all up, went over there, had private meetings, some public. And so John Boehner had to make that shutdown move. Now, Cruz is beating that drum again because he has this hallucination. He's going to be president of the United States one day.
Right.
And I do mean hallucination.
It really is. It's pretty amazing. What else is going on in the world,
well,
Bob?
I wanted to mention this one, Tom, because this is a big deal, and it's ending up putting a lot of politics aside, I think, for the right reasons in this case, but the militarization of the police forces. And this is unveiled today in the United States Senate because they're having, you know, a hearing on it. And if you look at the names who are really coming out swinging on this, Tom Coburn, Republican of Oklahoma.
Wow. So Republicans and Democrats. Bob Ney, the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Bob.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A few other things in the news today, and then we'll get back to ISIS and what the president is going to say tonight and what you or I would like to hear him say. And the dreadful lack of information that the American public has about the bigger picture with regard to the situation in Syria. And in many other places in the world, too. I would say Ukraine as well, and frankly, all over the world. We are, you know, having lived in Europe for a year, it astounded me how the average European could speak intelligently about internal politics in South Africa, in Israel, in European countries, in the United States, in Canada, in Australia. It's like, you know, just listen to the BBC some night. Wherever there's news happening, they report it. In the United States, our media is, a cat was retrieved from a tree, from a tree, and if some horrible thing happened in the process, that would make news. Balloon boy, OJ is driving too slow. I mean, this is the anyway. Here we have this Josh Israel is blogging about this over at the Center for American Progress's blog, thinkprogress.org. He writes, one of Georgia's largest counties announced last week that they're going to allow early voting on Sunday in late October and that they're going to open an early voting location in a shopping mall popular among African Americans. Uh-oh. Yeah, there you go. So we've got a shopping mall that a lot of African Americans like to use on the weekends, and the state is going to open early voting. And so Senator Fran Millar, M-I-L-L-A-R, I don't know if he calls it Miller or Millar, but anyhow, Senator Fran, who's a man, wrote, and I quote, he's the senior deputy whip, by the way, for the Georgia Senate Republicans, the number three guy in the Senate, in the Georgia State Senate Republican Party, or in the Senate itself. He said, now we are to have Sunday voting at the South DeKalb Mall just prior to the election. Per Jim Galloway of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, this location is dominated by African-American shoppers, and it's near several large African-American megachurches, such as the New Birth Missionary Baptist. I'm sure Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter, these are the Democrats who are running for the United States Senate and the governor's race, respectively, I'm sure Michelle Nunn and Jason Carter are delighted with this blatantly partisan move in DeKalb. Is it possible church buses will be used to transport people directly to the mall since the poll will be open when the mall opens? If this happens, so much for the accepted principle of separation of church and state. Right. Since the election of 1980, Republicans have been passing out voter guides in white churches all across America, to the tune of millions of them every election. And there's, I mean, I've lived in mostly white neighborhoods most of my life, and I've voted most of my life. And in white neighborhoods where I was voting, whether it was East Lansing, Michigan, or Plymouth, New Hampshire, or Atlanta, Georgia, the suburbs, the white northern suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia, or Portland, Oregon, or Montpelier, Vermont. These are the places Louise and I have lived, and I have never in my life had to wait more than 10 minutes to vote. To the best of my knowledge, I have no recollection of waiting any longer than that. I do remember in Atlanta waiting an hour and a half to get a driver's license, but not to vote. But on the other hand, if you live in a black neighborhood in Ohio or Florida or North Carolina or Georgia, you know, plan on spending the day. And tough luck if you're paid by the hour and you've got a job where you don't get that day off as a paid day. But here we've got a Republican, one of the most senior Republicans in the Republican Party in the state of Georgia, where Louise and I lived for the better part of 12 or 13 years. You've got a Republican saying, oh, my God, they're opening a voting place in an area that's heavily black. We can't have that. You know, to this point, actually, and I thought this was interesting. The New York Times public editor, this is kind of their ombudsman, their person who is, you know, talks to the public about how they edit the New York Times. The public editor back some time ago said that the paper, whenever they talk about voter ID laws, should point out that voter fraud is virtually non-existent. Out of a billion votes cast over the past 10 years, a billion votes, 31 were found to be fraudulent. And most of these were people, you know, who were well-intentioned. So there were a couple of Republicans who were voting twice, but most of them were people who had, you know, mom now has Alzheimer's, so I'll fill out the ballot for her. You know, I know how she would want to vote, how she always voted. That happened a couple of times. People voting for, you know, a friend or relative, and they get busted for it. Okay. And in almost every single case, by the way, they weren't voting in person. They were voting by absentee ballot. But 31 cases out of a billion votes. So the public editor said whenever the Times reports on in-person voter impersonation and Republican efforts to stop it with voter suppression ID laws, that they should point out that there's no need for these laws. And it turns out, and you can read this over at MediaMatters.org, Clarence Chance Sales writing in their research department on September 8th, it turns out that the Times reported the evidence on in-person voter impersonation in only 15 out of 28 articles. So 15 articles pointed out there's no need for voter ID laws. 13 articles didn't. They just reported on the voter suppression efforts and didn't call them voter suppression efforts. This is how our media lets us down. This is how you end up with conservatives who are operating on a different database than mine. And mine is, frankly, I don't believe, is a partisan database. I think that the stuff that I share with you every day is the stuff that everybody in America should know, left, right, and in between. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't cherry-pick facts and selectively present the news and information. I do try to point out things that are not as well reported as they should be. But here you've got a Georgia State Republican senator saying, oh, this is a terrible thing, that they're opening early voting in a black area. Oh, my God. This is going to hurt the Republican Party. If it's going to hurt the Republican Party, you should be reforming the damn party. It's incredible. It's just incredible. So that's going on. The beheadings are bait. I pointed this out to you. Matthew Ho wrote this. He's a senior fellow with the Center for International Policy, board of directors of the Council for a Livable World. His website, MatthewHOH.com, ho.com, and this was reprinted over at Huffington Post. The beheadings are bait. Are we going to take the bait? We'll find out tonight. Most Americans think that ISIS is a threat to the United States. I don't think ISIS is a threat to the United States, even if they succeed in pulling off something like 9/11. I don't think they're a threat to the United States. We are a tough country. We are a resilient people. This is the land of the free and the home of the brave. You take a shot at us, fine. Be prepared. We will shoot back. But we're not going to be cowed by you. We're not going to be afraid of you. And we're not going to spend our blood and treasure fighting a regional war that will elevate your stature on the other side of the damn planet. ISIS is hated by the people in the Middle East whose lands they are occupying. They only exist because John McCain and Lindsey Graham got funding for them out of Saudi Arabia, and because in Qatar, they're letting right-wing sheikhs fundraise for them.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's time for us to say, sorry, guys. See you later. 15 minutes past the hour. Speaking of Georgia, Paul in Noonan, Georgia, is on the line listening to or watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Paul, you want to share what you want to hear the president say tonight?
Yes, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for all that you do.
Sure.
Given the fact that Barack Obama is probably the most intelligent and the best educated president we've had in AIANS.
Yeah, since Kennedy, I'd say.
I would like for him to say, or he would probably like to say himself, that our whole excursion into the Near East is absurd and psychotic. We're only there because of the oil, and the world knows that. The American people in their gut know that. And so it's rather psychotic for us to remain there. But given the fact that he's a leader of the empire, he will not say that. And so he will pursue the fiction of ISIS being a threat and bringing a coalition of the ruling together and go on, and we end up on that slippery slope, as you've often alluded to, of getting millions of more people killed and destroying the environment.
Yeah.
We have, Tom, everyone knows that we have the renewable energy capabilities in abundance. Technology that you've often alluded to, that we can operate our automobiles on bacteria. Why in the world do we persist in allowing these psychopaths to control the world all for the sake of oil and their profits?
Well, the answer, Paul, is really easily summarized by one number, $31 trillion. That's $31 trillion is the amount of oil, natural gas, and coal that the five largest oil companies and the one largest coal company in the United States or in the world are sitting on. And they are damn well going to do everything they can to get that $31 trillion worth of fossil fuels out of the ground and into our air.
And they don't give a damn about the lives of the people or these...
No, they don't. These executives are all making... Yeah, these executives are all millionaires or billionaires. They have their five homes. They've got their... They probably have their fortress of solitude someplace. You know, they've got, you know... homes in remote places with, you know, emergency generators and years of food and probably dozens and dozens of low-wage workers out in the backyard growing the fields. And, I mean, it's like the ultra-rich in this country, they're going to make it through. They're the ultra-rich.
Yes.
And they don't give a rat's ass about American workers or American, you know, average American citizens or people who are living on the seacoast, unless they happen to have a mansion on the seacoast.
Yeah.
And they're probably the very rich are probably selling their mansions on the seacoast to the only moderately rich who will get screwed, too.
Thing is about decimating the population. Too many people. I mean, they're cold and they're calloused and they're basically insane. And poor Obama, I feel for him. He has the intelligence and the knowledge to know what it's really about, but he's chosen to be the leader of the empire, and he's helpless to do otherwise.
You may well be right, Paul. We will see. Thanks a lot for the call. I still think that this president has better judgment than any president we have had since Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter's judgment was pretty damn good. In his 4 years, he didn't get us involved in any foreign wars. Last president to do that. Right? No foreign wars. So we'll see how this plays out. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Viagra for your brain. The Tom Hartman program does not, however, lead to stiff thinking. Promise you. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, you want to share what you want to hear President Obama say tonight?
Oh, definitely. First of all, I'd like to say that, you know, we're his constituents. We believe in him. That's why we voted him in.
Right.
We actually believe that he has a better view on the world and that can actually, you know, help build this country back up to what it was before.
Right.
Where the middle class actually, you know, made strides in this country to take care of their families and also contribute to the society.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest thing that's bothering me is I really want him to speak out on what this conservative party has done to this country as far as the reputation and as far as, you know, the image that we're perpetuating across the world.
Yeah.
Basically, he hasn't had any help from them. I remember he wanted to go into Syria and, you know, try to get rid of Assad, and these Republicans, they stopped him. on every measure.
Right.
And by them stopping him and continuously stopping him, that I think was something that emboldened Putin, because he didn't think that even if, you know, that we would have a united front against him, at least not to bear any arms. I mean, you know, basically he didn't have any threat, because he knew that the Republicans would stop President Obama even on that.
I don't think Putin's coming after us. I think Putin's going after NATO, and he's just saying, I don't want NATO on my border. That was the deal that we cut back in the 90s with the Bush administration, the first Bush administration, when the Soviet Union dissolved, was no NATO on Russia's borders. George W. Bush broke that deal in 2004 when he put NATO into Estonia, which has a border with Russia. And now Barack Obama wants to break that deal by putting NATO into Ukraine. I don't think this is expansionist or, Putin's not doing an Adolf Hitler. He's not saying we need more Lebensraum. We need the Sudetenland. I just don't think that that's the case. I think Russia's just, looking out for its own strategic interests.
Well, whenever I think of NATO, I think of the United States. Basically, NATO is an extension of the an arm of the United States. And to me, if we did such things, then basically it was just to cripple the USSR even more. But just go back to what I'm saying right now in this speech tonight. I would like for him to point out that he's had opposition all of the way. They have to take some blame, some responsibility for what they've done. They've weakened us in this way. And also, the people that voted these guys in 2010, when they were saying that they was going to create jobs, but they was also going to stop Obama at every level, this is what you get. And so they also have to blame even the people that voted them in. And there's got to be a reckoning where people take responsibility for what they're doing and don't pass the buck. And last but not least, we voted him in as the majority of the people voted him in. We ought to get the respect from these conservatives that we made the right choice, that we believe in governing just as well as they do, even better. And our ideas and our the things that we want done, we should have a chance to do it too. You have all of these rich people, they put solar panels on their yachts, with, you know, those yachts are really just self-independent islands on their own.
Yeah.
You have these companies that's putting up solar panels on street signs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to think about our renewable energies and stop this nonsense about this fossil fuel. I think that's what's got some of these people, these little kids, sick with this epidemic. I think it's because of the fracking. You know, one of these days it's going to come out that, you know, that's what this epidemic is all about, and then where are we going
to
be?
Yeah. Well, and again, to take it to Ukraine, Ukraine's got a $10 billion deal with Chevron to frack Ukraine. They're sitting on what might be 20% of all the natural gas in Europe. From Ukraine to the Middle East, what we're seeing are messy situations that Americans are trying to deal with bumper sticker answers, and it doesn't work. Charles, thank you for the call. Bill in Houston, Texas. Hey, Bill, you wanted to talk about Dick Cheney?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Sure. I had a question. I don't understand how guys like Cheney and Rumsfeld have the testicular fortitude to come out and criticize the Obama administration, and for that matter, any administration, when first they didn't keep us safe under their administration.
I think this is a desperate effort to rescue their legacy. I think they're
they
think the best defense is a good offense. They're trying to prevent being prosecuted as war criminals, whether in a court of law or whether in the court of public opinion.
Exactly. As well, they committed war crimes. But it does seem like President Bush did get the email, because he rarely or if ever has come out since Obama's been in office and criticized them. He focused more on his painting. And
right.
I think he understands that whole concept of how he was elected into office the first time, but put into office based on his name and his father's cronies.
You're talking about Bush.
I mean,
he was put into office by the Supreme Court.
Exactly. But with a lot of influence from his father, I would
add. Well, and with a lot of help from John Roberts. John Roberts went down to Florida and taught. He was a clerk for Rehnquist, who was the Chief Justice. John Roberts went down to Florida and taught the lawyers how to argue in front of Rehnquist, and they went up to Washington, D.C., and they argued Bush v. Gore in front of Rehnquist, and they won. And so when Bush became president, he made John Roberts Chief Justice of the Supreme Court as a payoff for that.
Oh, I didn't even realize that.
Oh, yeah, it's fairly well documented. I mean, Roberts denied it, but yeah, there were people who were there. And Roberts said, oh, I was just down in Florida on vacation. Right. And on your vacation, you were volunteering to train lawyers about, you know, to argue Bush v. Gore. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Cheney, I mean, why are we consulting war criminals about war? It makes no sense to me. It's like, you know, Chile digging out General Pinochet and asking him how to run their country. It's nuts. Bill, thank you for the call. Ivan in Chicago. Oh, no, we're out of time. Okay, hang on. Ivan, I'm going to put you back on hold. We will pick up your call after the break. Sorry, I missed that time cue there. But what do you want to hear the president say tonight? He's going to be speaking at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific time. And, you know, what do you want to hear him say? What should he be saying to the American people? There we go. We'll be right back. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And there's a lot of countries in the region, you know, Jordan, for example, that has a lot at stake. They've got a border with Iraq and a border with Syria. What are they going to do? Let's empower the Jordanians. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Whew. Okay, Ivan has some strong opinions in Chicago about what he does not want to hear the president say. Hey, Ivan.
Hey, Tom. Yeah. I don't want the president to say ISIL is a threat to the homeland. They don't have an Air Force. They don't have a Navy. There's no bridge across the Atlantic. And Toyota pickups don't float.
Right. There you go. And even if they can get a couple of people into this country who can do us some harm the way that the IRA did with Great Britain, you know, back in the, 70s and 80s, even if they can pull that off, so what? We're a big country. We're resilient. We can take care of ourselves. We're virtually a police state now. We can track these guys down. And I'm not saying that with enthusiasm, frankly, but I'll bet you he is going to say that tonight and to insulate himself from criticism if they do manage to pull off some 9/11 kind of attack. But
exactly. But let's put it this way. If I'm on a plane and it's being hijacked, I know I'm not going to Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and let's keep in mind that there have been
never happen again.
Right.
Not allow it.
Yeah, the third plane went by. That plane that went down in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, went down because those people knew what had happened on 9/11 just hours before, just an hour, you know, fractions of an hour before. They had figured it out, and they took that plane down. And there have been several instances since then, at least a half a dozen, including the underwear bomber, which was a serious attempt or a serious half attempt. And others were just, you know, you just had crazy people in the airplane, including one time where the flight attendant flipped out, apparently on or off her meds or maybe on Laramine, this new anti-malaria drug that causes psychosis. She flipped out and the passengers took her down. I mean, people on airplanes are not going to put up with hijacking anymore. Thank you. End of discussion. And plus, we've hardened the cockpit doors, which is something we should have done back in the 70s when the rest of the world did. But the airlines lobbied to make that not happen because they didn't want to spend $100,000 per plane. Ivan, I'm with you. Thanks for the call. Jim, in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. Hey, Jim, you wanted to talk about ISIS?
Yeah. Oh, I just had a comment about ISIS. It is that the inherent built-in instability in that region, and that was, as you know, when they made those borders to those countries back in the last century.
After World War One.
And yeah. After World War One. And that was done, I think, intentionally to create all sorts of kind of ethnic groups that are religious groups that were going to conflict with each other, and therefore they would avoid another caliphate. Okay.
Well, I think they were also, you know, the people with good intentions were trying to avoid what is essentially the Pakistan-India situation. That if you segregate people by religion, then what you end up with are religious states who are looking at each other. You know, India and Pakistan both have nuclear weapons now. You end up with two states where the people hate each other and they've got very, very powerful weapons. And that's a that can be a real disaster. And so they thought, okay, we'll throw these people together and we'll put a strong man in charge. And, you know, and it sort of held for a while, but, you know.
I mean, those kind of countries where you do have, okay, you have a ethnic group that don't, or religious groups that do not like each other, yeah, and have been at war with each other for a few, you know, 1,000 years. What would you need to keep that going would be a strong man and an authoritarian government.
Right.
And the way what I'm getting at is that before we interacted with it, with these strong men, with these tyrants, with Saddam Hussein, that area was as stable as it's ever going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the borders.
When we go in there, and try to shift things, bring democracy, bring, you know, whatever we try to, you know, our government thinks it ought to have it in there, you know, what we end up doing is making it worse,
yeah,
every time.
Well, and it's because an outside power, it's as if Canada was to decide tomorrow that, you know, John Boehner won't bring up legislation in the House of Representatives, our country is screwed up, but we're gridlocked, things aren't going well, it's bad for America, so Canada's going to invade and take over our government, right? I guarantee you,
yeah,
that people left, right, and in between would be out there, you know, taking pot shots at Canadian soldiers who were occupying our country. It's just nobody likes to have their country occupied. Nobody likes to be told what to do. Countries want to work out their own stuff, even if it's messy or even if it's ugly. They like to work out their own stuff, and we shouldn't, you know, we never should have been there in the first place. Jim, thank you for the call. Very well said. Daniel in Rochester, New York. Hey, Daniel.
Yes, how's your problem?
Hi, you wanted to get back to my discussion with Scotty in the first half hour of the show?
Yeah, if I haven't forgotten it already, I was going to comment. Her name was Scotty, a conservative, right?
Yeah, Scotty Nell Hughes. And, she's got a new book called Roar. And let's not personalize this because she's not here to defend herself.
Oh, of course. But I just wanted to comment on the fact you were right when you say that you were working from two different data points.
Yeah.
And that was a fact. But as far as facts are concerned, you know, there's only one fact. There's not a conservative or a liberal fact.
I'm with you. I'm with
you. And you had to correct her quite a few times. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah. Okay. Well said, Daniel. Thank you very much, and thanks for listening. Carl in Chicago, you wanted to share what you want to hear Obama say tonight?
Yeah. Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hey, Carl.
Yeah. Basically, what I want him to say is that everything that he's doing right now, this is kind of a brand new situation that we're facing right now with ISIS or ISIL, whatever name they want to go by. And actually, all of the information and all the plans that they're formulating right now, that's top secret information. And he is not going to spell out, it's just like a football game, the game plan, what they're going to do. Especially because you don't want to forewarn the enemy before you do it. And now he's organizing countries that are going to approach this in probably a very unique and a different way than the old-fashioned shock and awe way that we used to do that didn't work very well.
Yeah, I'm with you.
War,
go ahead.
Yeah, there was a war that I'm sure everybody remembers, and that was World War II, and it was D-Day. And the amount of secrecy and the amount of subterfuge that the English did in trying to throw Hitler off on where they're going to attack one area, and they had fake tanks and they had, you know, everything
fake
going
airplanes,
one way.
Yeah, cardboard airplanes.
Exactly, and we're going to go land at one of the toughest landing places that you could land, right. And I would just tell him that. You know what? They're formulating plans. This is brand new stuff. There's a lot of intelligent people. We have our military, top military men formulating this plan. We have other countries involved. We have a coalition that's big and getting bigger every day because they appreciate the fact that he's an intelligent person and he has an intelligent approach to trying to solve the problem. And he's not saying that he's going to annihilate them and get rid of them. He's
right.
Saying that they're going to shrink them down,
right,
so they're going to be manageable. But he knows, he's realistic. You're never going to get rid of them completely, but he wants to get them down to a size where they'll be it'll be a manageable,
yeah,
kind of
and,
thing.
And that's my point where I said I think he has good judgment. But
yes,
you know, to your point, if you're playing a baseball game and your position is catcher, You don't stand up and yell at the pitcher, hey, throw a fastball. You know, instead you signal it in a way that the batter can't see it. And that's what I'm sure that that's what the White House is going to be doing with regard to any war plans, for lack of a better phrase. But on the other hand, he's got a political imperative here. We are, you know, a month and a half out from an election, or 2 months out from election roughly. And the Republicans are playing this for all they can. They will politicize anything, including the death of Americans. Carl, thanks for the call. Well said. Frank in Elkton, Maryland. Hey, Frank, what's up?
Tom, I'd like to add to the conversation. I'm not surprised that the Republicans are talking to Dick Cheney. It seems that they did the same thing back in the 70s and 80s when Richard Nixon resigned office. They used him as a consultant. And I believe that's exactly why they don't have any kind of a plan for the country.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. And the Republicans operate inside this bubble, this information vacuum that's, Fox so-called news, or maybe we should call it Fox Saudi news, since the second largest stockholder in Fox News is a Saudi citizen. But yeah, I'm with you. Thanks a lot for the call. Chris in Brookings, Oregon. We got a minute to the break. Chris, it's yours.
Yeah, here I am, Tom. Thanks again. Longtime listener all the way back to Portland, Oregon.
Thank you.
Anyway, think back to Cheney. This is the premise of what I will attempt to highlight. Now, there was Cheney when he was working with Bush Sr., and he had a video or a radio interview where he went on to explain why Bush Sr. did not go into Baghdad,
right,
mainly because they did not want to incite the whole Middle East.
Right, and also because he said that you can't hold Iraq. You know, the Kurds will fly off. He actually went through
exactly
a very intelligent analysis of it.
Yeah, it was. It was. It was not perverted. I mean, perverted in the sense that I think that someone who lies or spins half-truths are perverted. I will not.
Well, see, when Cheney became vice president, the corporation that he owned millions of dollars worth of stock in was on the verge of bankruptcy. They needed some large government contracts, some large no-bid government contracts, Halliburton. And Cheney got them for him. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. And he got it thanks to the Iraq War that he helped start.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Not to mention the also equally unnecessary Afghan War that he helped start. We destroyed two countries in the heart of the Middle East. And we're surprised that the Middle East is in flames? Welcome back. Steve in Bedford, Ohio. Hey, Steve, you had a question about President Obama and the status of forces agreement?
Yeah, Tom. Yeah, I'm a first-time caller. I am so tired of hearing the right wing. Every time they get on TV, they're criticizing the president for not signing the status of forces. I think he needs to get on there tonight and talk about some of the things, some of the reasons why he didn't sign that agreement. I believe he would have put our troops in harm's way by signing that agreement.
Well, Iraq refused to go along with it.
Right. Didn't their parliament pass a law prohibiting Maliki from...
That's correct. They explicitly forbade their own government from signing the Status of Forces Agreement, which is why we had to leave. I mean, I don't think that at the time that we left, Obama wanted us to leave. But it's also important to remember that it was the Bush administration that negotiated that date. The Bush administration had negotiated the withdrawal date out of Iraq, and Obama kept it.
But somehow all of the senators and congressmen, they forget that part of it, that the Iraqi parliament had forced Maliki to put that into their make that law.
I know you're absolutely right
about that part of it. They don't ever say that. They just say he had a chance to sign it. It's almost like they're saying, okay, he just didn't want to sign it, and that makes him look real bad. He needs to get on TV and say just what you said, that the parliament passed a law forbidding Maliki, you know, putting that into law. So yeah, he needs to say that on TV.
Yeah, I'm with you. Steve, thank you for the call. Jim in Chillicothe, Illinois. Hey, Jim. McCain and Graham?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Hello?
You wanted to talk about John McCain and Lindsey Graham?
Yeah, I'd like to see the president tonight mention their names and take them boys to the woodshed.
You mean something like, well, ever since John McCain and Lindsey Graham went over to Saudi Arabia to talk Prince Bandar into getting a bunch of billionaire Saudis to give money to Sunni insurgents in Syria, those Sunni insurgents have been known as ISIL. And we have a little bit of a problem with them now, and I would hope that Mr. McCain and Mr. Graham would recognize the error of their ways and support me. Something like that?
Well, did anybody send them over there, or did they go on over there on their own?
They went on their own.
I think that should be a charge of treason right there.
Well, it's not treason. Although the Congress is not given the job of running our foreign policy, that's in the executive branch, Congress does have to ratify treaties. And there's no treaty at risk here. There's no treaty in this equation, to the best of my knowledge. But Congress does have a role to play in foreign policy, arguably. I think these guys overstepped their brief. I think they went farther than the Constitution envisioned for them. But I'm sure that they would argue that, hey, you know, we're the U.S. Senate. We have, you know, it's our obligation to speak out and do what we want. It's just thing that makes me crazy is nobody's pointing out that, you know, it was McCain and Graham who did this thing that's causing all these problems.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Jim, thanks a lot for the call and thanks for pointing it out. Yeah, I'd love to hear the president say that tonight, too. I think we can safely put that on the list of things that he will not say. Tragic. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Before the hour, so Dick Cheney got together with a select group of House Republicans yesterday to advise them. Was it the Dick Cheney who led us into Iraq in 2003 into an absolute disaster and quagmire that has broken the Middle East? Or was it the Dick Cheney from the 1990s, the early 1990s or late 1980s? I think it was 91, wasn't it? 94. Oh, he's speaking, Clinton is president at this point, and he's speaking of the 1991 or 92 Gulf War, and he's talking about how, here's Dick Cheney himself.
Once you got to Iraq and took it over and took down Saddam Hussein's government, then what are you going to put in its place? That's a very volatile part of the world, and if you take down the central government in Iraq, you can easily end up seeing pieces of Iraq fly off. Part of it the Syrians would like to have to the west. Part of eastern Iraq the Iranians would like to claim, fought over for 8 years. In the north, you've got the Kurds. And if the Kurds spin loose and join with the Kurds in Turkey, then you threaten the territorial integrity of Turkey. It's a quagmire if you go that far and try to take over Iraq. The other thing was casualties. Everyone was impressed with the fact that we were able to do our job with as few casualties as we had. But for the 146 Americans killed in action and for their families, it wasn't a cheap war. And the question for the president in terms of whether or not we went on to Baghdad and took additional casualties in an effort to get Saddam Hussein was how many additional dead Americans is Saddam worth? And our judgment was not very many, and I think we got it right.
Yeah. Yeah, that Dick Cheney? Cool. I have a feeling, though, that Dick Cheney left with the old Dick Cheney's heart. I wonder if he's got a heart transplant, right? He's got a pulse now? Yeah. I wonder where that heart came from. Bill Kristol hasn't died, so it didn't come from there. I don't know. Murph in Mokena, Illinois. Is that right, Murph?
That's right.
Hey, what's on your mind?
From what I've been able to gather about ISIS and ISIL.
Yeah.
The second S in ISIS is Syria.
Right, and the L in ISIL is Levant, which is this large region that extends from Israel all the way to Saudi Arabia.
Syria, he might need them, and he needs Putin to stop his stuff. So he's careful to say ISIL so it doesn't include Syria.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that that's just the acronym that the U.S. military has been using all along, and the president's just following along with them. But who knows?
All right. You have a good day, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Murph. Good to hear from you. Gary in Ferndale, Washington.
Hey, Tom, long-time listener, big fan. Just two quick things on her book.
Scotty's book.
Scotty's book. I just find it odd that it seems like a lot of conservative talking points that when faced with the facts, they didn't hold up. And you had to correct her on the Keystone pipeline,
yeah,
you know, as to the involvement of the Koch brothers. And she didn't seem to be aware of that. So,
right.
And secondly, I'd like to see President Obama have an Andrew Shepherd moment tonight and tell all these critics, you know, to sit down and shut up. And,
Andrew Shepherd.
Lost the election.
Oh, it's
the
a movie.
President.
Okay. Yeah, it's a movie I haven't seen. So I.
Oh, well, yeah, you need to check it out.
Or a Bullworthy
okay,
movement. I did see that movie with, Bullworth, with Warren Beatty. That was pretty good. Gary, thanks for the call. It's a good one. Ricky in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Ricky, what's up?
Good morning. First-time caller. Love your program.
Thank you.
I wanted a gold record right now. I voted Republican all my life. And after this last debacle, I voted for Obama this last time around. I'll never vote for a Republican again as long as I live. My comment, most people have already touched on it. And I want to know if you know your comment. I think if the Republicans are trying to trick our president into going into Syria so they can blame everything from time he went into office on him, and then hopefully we'll all forget about what happened in the Bush administration prior to that. And I'll leave on that note, but what if the Democrats retain the Senate and gain the House this midterm? That would throw a wrench in things, wouldn't it?
It would. It's not going to happen, but it would. You're right, Ricky. Thanks a lot for the call. I'm sorry, I got a sneezing jag here. I don't know what's going on. Barry in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Barry, you want to talk about Dick Cheney?
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's not changing. He didn't change his heart. His heart goes with money. And at the time, in 92, 93, at that point, is he wasn't getting paid to start a war. He did later on. So it's not that his heart changed. He's just Dick Cheney.
Okay. So back then, it was not in his interest to have a war. And in 2003, it was.
Exactly. He made a whole lot of money with Halliburton. As you said, Halliburton's about to go through bankruptcy. But that's what the Republicans are about. They're about the 1% bubble that's about to cause our country to go back down on the economy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. Thank you, Barry, for the call. Bob in Philadelphia. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
What I'm worried about, Tom, is with this Russia thing. It reminds me Panama.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Did you hear me?
You said this Russian thing of reminds me of Panama. I'm not sure what you mean.
Yeah, like we went after Noriega, and you know, to shut him up, they killed 5,000 people because somebody's reputation would be hurt. And he's going after Putin.
Yeah.
And Putin, what did Putin do?
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's threatening us right now. There's a lot of things you can criticize, you know, Putin and the Russian government about. But I don't think most of what's happening in the Ukraine is one of them. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Dan in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hi. First off, I want to thank you for all the information and knowledge I get from you listening to your radio station.
Thanks, Dan. We just have a half a minute here before the end of the show, so make your point.
Now, first of all, I want to hit on the hemp, because Henry Ford used hemp to fuel his cars. Hemp was used in the United States until after World War II. And I read about it in the history books when I was in elementary school. And all of a sudden, it's a big evil. I just don't understand. Hemp was used for 10,000 years prior. It's God's
Well, the good news is that is changing, Dan. You've got commercial hemp being legalized in a number of states. And, you know, the federal government needs to get behind this. Dan, thanks a lot for the call. And thanks for listening. And thanks to you for listening or watching our program today. It is much appreciated. Please let our underwriters and our stations know if you are listening and appreciate the show. Let me know if you don't appreciate it. And don't forget, democracy really, truly doesn't just happen in a vacuum. It's like the people who show up decide the agenda. That should be you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.